Good morning. Find my place here. Let's get started. All right. We're going to start in John chapter 10. John chapter 10 and look at verse number 11. John 10, 11. The words of Jesus Christ here say, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. But he that is an hireling and not the shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming, and leaveth the sheep, and fleeth. And the wolf chaseth them, and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth, because he is an hireling, and careth not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and am known of mine." Let's open up in a word of prayer. All right, Father in heaven, we thank you so much that we can be here together today again, and just pray that you would encourage us in the things of the Christian life, and help us to take full hold of what you've laid before us, Lord, and just get engaged in the fight, and Lord, do everything that you have planned for us. And we just thank you for your grace here this morning to give us the opportunity to meet and talk about these things, and your love to us, Lord, that calls us to something better. And we thank you for it in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. So I want to ask you a question this morning, and the question is something that you'll answer for yourself. And it's something that we should ponder, I think, and reflect on in terms of we know what answer we should give. But if we were to give the answer honestly, what would your answer be? And the answer, or the question rather, is this. What is the Christian life to you? Is the Christian life to you a hobby? Is the Christian life to you a job? Is the Christian life to you a profession? All right. Think about those three words to begin with. A hobby, a job, or profession. Let me start off by just giving some idea of what those words are about. And then we'll get into something specific here in a minute. The first word I mentioned is the word hobby. Is the Christian life to you a hobby? When I say a hobby, I think about a hobby as an activity or an interest that you pursue for pleasure or for relaxation, right? But it's not your main occupation. It's not what you occupy your time with. It's something you do in your spare time, right? Hobbies, really, you know, we might have fun with, we enjoy them, we might even wish that they were our full-time occupation. But when push comes to shove, hobbies just get to fill in the gaps. Right? Hobbies just fill in. Hobbies are really like activities that don't really go anywhere. Right? At least not for a long time. We play, we tinker around, we, you know, fiddle with something for a little while, but that's pretty much the end of it. And so some people, I submit to you, would say that they have an interest in the Christian life. It's interesting to them. It gives them some relaxation. It gives them some pleasure when they have time for it. But truth were to be told, and you were to look at their lives, and you were to answer the question, in their case, very honestly, you would say the Christian life for them is a hobby. Christian life is a hobby. I don't want my Christian life to be a hobby. Right, but that's where, if truth be told, probably is sometimes. Right, it gets put in the gaps between some things. There's other folks. The second word I mentioned, the word job. There's other folks that see the Christian life as necessary, but truth be told, they don't have the same kind of interest and passion they have about their hobbies for it. You know, a job is work that's done for pay. All right? My dad, you know, he works at a chemical plant, and he talks about, you know, sometimes the management will come in and they'll have, you know, some discussion, some speaker, some things that are talking about career development or career enhancement or, you know, making sure they get the most out of their career. And the workforce there, by and large, comes back, retorts with the comment, "I don't have a career, I have a job." Right? Which is to say, that I really don't have any interest in what I'm doing here. I don't have any particular care to get better at what I'm doing. Right? I just want to show up and you give me the paycheck. And in fact, if we can do away with that first part, I'll be happy. Right? Just send the check in the mail and we call it good, and that'll make me, that'll make me better. And really and truly, we read in John chapter 10, something here about an hireling. And a hireling is kind of like a person whose attitude towards what he does is that of a job. Right? Let's look at that again. Look at John chapter 10 again. Look at verse number 12. But he that is an hireling and not the shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming and leaveth the sheep. Now you can think about that in whatever job you happen to do, right? I could say, for example, he that is an hireling and not the shepherd, whose own the research is not. Right? I do research for a living. Right? If I don't care the outcome of it, I just do it because I have to show up and get a paycheck for it, then it's not my stuff. I don't own it. I don't care. Right? I'm just doing it. All right? Maybe you have a different job. Maybe you're a carpenter, for example. And you can say, he that is an hireling and not the carpenter whose own the house is not, careth not. Right? Once he's done with the job, you're the one that's got to live in it, not him. Right? And if that's the case, you can imagine the quality of the job that's going to be done. Right? Which is to say, the quality of the job that's going to be done is just enough to not get fired. Okay? I don't want my Christian life to be lived in a way that's just enough to not get fired. Right? So basically, a man at his job doesn't care if the product or a service he's providing is imperfect. Right? He doesn't care if it's flawed. He just cares that it passes his supervisor's inspection. Right? That's it. Right? That's the criteria. Right? He's not trying to be the best carpenter he can be. He's not trying to be the best researcher he can be. He's not trying to be the best soldier he can be. He's trying not to get noticed. Right? Flying just under the radar and just above the trees. All right? That's the hireling. That's the guy who sees the Christian life as a job. And some people, for them, the Christian life is a job. How does that play out? Well, that means you might have somebody who sees the need to go out and do Christian service, to do Christian ministry. Maybe they see the need to come to church every week. Maybe they see the need to read their Bible every day. Maybe they see the need to say their prayers, or even they see the need to go and say a word to the lost world. Maybe they see a need for those things, but truth be told, it's just a duty. It's just something they feel like they gotta do because that's just what people expect of them. Right? Alright, I'm gonna read my chapter for the day. Here I go. Alright? Alright, I read it. And that's about as much as gets taken in. Right? Alright, I showed up, I'm in my pew. What more can you ask of me? I'm here. Okay, I may even sing. You won't hear me, but I'm mouthing the words. Right? It's my job to be here, so I'm doing it. Okay? Some people, that's the Christian life for them. That's a miserable life. That's a miserable life. For some people, the Christian life is a profession. Now we talk about professions of faith and so forth and this kind of thing. I use the word here to mean that somebody wants to be a professional Christian. Right? They want to be, as Paul says, they want to strive for the mastery. Alright? They want to do that, whatever they're called to do. And I talked about in Sunday school a little bit this morning, the individual calling, the ministry that everybody has in particular. And they want to figure out what that is, and they want to be good at it. Right? And if truth be told, their aim is to be the best at it. Right? See, in a profession, your paycheck is not all that's on the line, but your whole person. In other words, your identity is wrapped up in that thing which you are supposed to be good at, all right? If you are somebody who's a professional lawyer, for example, you want to be known as somebody who knows his way around the law, knows his way around the courtroom. Your identity is wrapped up in that. In fact, should it be the case that, for whatever reason, you were to be dismissed from that job and it was no longer an option for you to practice law, you'd be adrift. You wouldn't know what to do with yourself because that's who you are. That's how you define yourself. Right? That's what a professional is. Profession is a public acknowledgement. It means that you're known for something, right? Or you're making something known, right? The profession of faith is you're making something known. Having a profession is something you're known for. Now look at 1 Corinthians chapter 8. I want to say something about professionals. We're going to get into the meat of the message here in just a second, but this is a way of introduction. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 8. First Corinthians chapter 8, now as touching things offered unto idols, verse 1 of chapter 8, now as touching things offered unto idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffeth up, but charity edifieth. See, the thing about professionals that professionals have to be wary of is that professionals can be know-it-alls. Okay? Professionals can be know-it-alls. Professors are know-it-alls, by and large. All right? This is why, I won't go into that. See, being a profession, or having the Christian life as a profession, doesn't mean that you're a know-it-all. Right? It doesn't mean being book smart. Right? You can be a professional Christian, but be professing the wrong thing. Right? And have the wrong profession in the Christian life. You can be a renowned Bible teacher, for example, but completely be off the mark with your doctrine. Alright? You may identify yourself with that, but truth be told, you're guilty of malpractice. Alright? So it's not just about knowing it all. It's not just about being good at it in the sense of some skill. Alright? But it's about living it and identifying with it in a deep way. We've talked about 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 25, if you want to look at that. Every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. That's what really being a professional is. See, if you want to be a professional, you need to be temperate in all things. In other words, you need to control everything about yourself. If you want to be a great swimmer, for example, right, you want to work off every bit of resistance that you have on your body. You're going to shave your head. Right? Because if you got long hair, thick hair, it's going to slow you down in the water. Right? If you want to be a professional, right, you're going to do everything. You're going to drop every weight. Right? Think about Hebrews. Look at Hebrews chapter 12 and verse number 1. Hebrews 12 and verse number 1. Wherefore, seeing we are also compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. See, if you want to run the race the right way, you're not going to carry around anything with you, right? You're going to be running around in your running shorts, because that's all you want to have weighing you down, right? No one runs a race carrying a big backpack or something, right? That's not the way you run a race. Now, there's people that got to run a long way with backpacks, but that's for a different reason, all right? But if you're trying to win a race, if you're trying to do it for time, you're not going to carry anything you don't need. All right, if you're going to strive for the mastery, you're going to be temperate in all things. All right, you're going to do without some things. You're going to suffer need, suffer loss, all right? You're going to be hungry sometimes and thirsty sometimes, but you're going to press on, because that's what being a professional is about. It's about doing things, right, that are tough, but you want to be the very best. And to be the best, there's some things you got to do without. All right. So given that introduction, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the job that I have, my career, right? My professional work. And that is as a researcher for the Department of the Navy. And in that role, I get to do different projects. I get to study various aspects of the personnel system in the Navy and how to put people in the right jobs and how to make sure the training they get is everything that it needs to be and it's done the most efficiently it can be, it's done the most effectively it can be, because ultimately those guys are going out and putting themselves in harm's way, and we want to make sure the right person is doing the right job and they got the right training to do it. But as part of that job, as part of my career work here in Millington, one of the projects that I got to work on was a project that was trying to really get a feel for what are all the dimensions, what are all the pieces that it takes to make a sailor. What is it to be a professional sailor in the United States Navy? What does it mean? And the reason we want to know that is because ultimately we'd like to be able to measure how good a job the people who are supposed to be making these people into sailors are doing. How good is boot camp, right, at shaving off all that excess weight that we need to get rid of. And not just physical weight, but the emotional baggage, the mental hang-ups, the things that would be unbecoming of a service member, right? How good a job is the training doing? All right, to get them where they need to be. We need to know those things. We need to be able to measure them so we can make sure that we're giving the country the best quality product that we can. All right, we're sending the people out in the best shape they can be. And so my team and I set out to do some interviews with various stakeholders, as we say, in the process, people who either were going through the process of becoming sailors or were responsible for different parts of that process. Right, the instructors at the schools or the supervisors at the work site, right, the leadership at the top. We interviewed a lot of these people to try to figure out what do people think being a sailor is about. And I had no specific thought in my mind going into this that there would be any spiritual lesson that I would take away from that work. But sitting through the first round of interviews, it became very clear to me all of a sudden that what they were saying was deeply spiritual, right? And if we applied it to the Christian life, and we saw the Christian life in terms that they gave me for what it takes to be a sailor, our churches would be different, right? They'd be revolutionized because people wouldn't come to church, they wouldn't live their lives as if this was a hobby or even like it was a job. All right, they'd be professionals. All right, and let me tell you a little bit about what it means to be a professional sailor. And just we're going to go through a few points here. The first thing that they emphasized when we talked about being a sailor, we can look at 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17. Look at the words of David in verse 29. 1 Samuel 17, 29, and David said, "What have I now done? Is there not a cause?" Of course, this is the question he asks when his brothers are getting on to him for making the statement that he was going to go take on Goliath. All right? And his brother, if you look at verse 28, says to him, "Why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those two sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle." All right? He's accusing him of pride and misbehavior. Right? And coming out here and doing these things. And there's going to be some Christians, if you live the Christian life the right way, that are going to accuse you of doing it for the wrong reasons. All right? First thing off the bat, you're going to question your motives. But here's the comeback. Is there not a cause? And the first part of being a sailor is being dedicated to a higher cause. Being dedicated to a higher cause. You see, if you're dedicated to a higher cause, if you believe that what you are signing up for means something, and it's important, then all the sacrifices that go along with it are okay. See, those guys go out to sea for months at a time. You go 6 months without seeing your wife and kids, that's a sacrifice. Right? I go away for 6 days. That's a sacrifice. These guys go away for a lot longer. Alright? But, if they can honestly look in the mirror and say, look, I'm doing this for a higher cause. I'm doing this for a reason that goes beyond just me. It's not just about me and my little life and my little family. It's about something bigger than us. Then that's okay. So the first thing you have to have is a dedication to that higher cause. If you want to be a professional sailor. It turns out that people who have been, they say, on the quote-unquote raw end of the deal have an easier time with that, by the way. And it's interesting, the thing about David, when David fled from Saul, who came to him? Who met him in the wilderness? The discontent, the disgruntled, right? People who are on the raw end of the deal. Paul says in one place, you see your calling, brethren, how that not many noble, not many mighty, not many wise are called. Why? Because they have a harder time with it. People who don't have a lot in this world, it's an easier thing for them to say, you know what, there's something better than what I got. All right, if you think you own the world, well, you can take it or leave it sometimes. Now, you might be like Moses, and you might have access to all the riches of Egypt, and you might be wise enough to say, look, what's little Egypt mean, you know, for my little lifespan compared to the riches of God for all eternity? And there's some wise people out there who have access to everything and turn it away. The Apostle Paul falls into that category as well, right? But by and large, Christ says, how seldom do the rich enter the kingdom of heaven. Why? Because they trust in something else, and they don't see the need for a higher cause. They don't see the greatness and the honor of that higher calling. So the first thing you have to have is dedication to a higher cause. All right. You've also got to see the big picture. Also got to see the big picture. See, the Christian life isn't about you. Right? And you have your trials, and you have your tribulations, you have your hang-ups. Right? You might be cumbered about with much serving, but it's not about you. And if you think it's about you, then you're going to get disgruntled real quick. If it's not about you, then you got to figure out who it is about. And if you can do it for that one that it is about, then again, those things are okay. See, in the bigger picture, you got to understand that there's a battle going on. There's a war raging right now. And it's not in Afghanistan. And it's not in Iraq. There are wars over there. Okay? But the primary war that we should be engaged in every day is the spiritual war that goes on around us. Alright? And there is a war. And it's in your heart. And it's in the heart of each and every person that you interact with. And you can either interact with somebody in a way that supplies aid to the rebels, right? Or you can act in a way that supplies aid to the other side. And you got to decide which one you're aiding. Your foreign policy, as it were. Right? Who are you in for? Are you there to support the spirit, or are you going to support the flesh? Now, you might not think of this as supporting the flesh, but when you bicker with somebody, when you argue with somebody, you may think you're not serving them at all. Well, you are serving their flesh to gain victory over their spirit. Right? You may not think you're aiding them in any way, but you're aiding the evil that would overtake them, that's in their heart. See, it's a bigger picture. It's not just about you had a bad day and you're going to take it out on somebody, or you're going to, you know, just let somebody hear your frustration. It's not about that. All right? It's about the spiritual battle that's going on inside that person's heart and all the people they're going to touch. Okay? And so you need to bring out in them the best. You need to bring out the spiritual man out of everybody. And if you can do that, then you're supplying aid to the right side. Okay? But there's a bigger picture. You've got to know that. You might think about all these things, really, being lumped together under the idea of responsibility. You might go even a little further and say that you can lump these things under the idea of accountability. So you're accountable to God, not only for your own behavior, but you're accountable to God for other people. See, God has put most everybody in a position to be over somebody. Right? If you're a parent, you're over your kids. Right? If you're a Sunday school or a children's church or whatever, you're over the people that you're teaching. Right? If you're a pastor of a church, you're over the congregation. You are over somebody. With respect to having to give an account, you're going to give an account not only for yourself, but for all of them. Help your pastor out. Make his job easy. Alright? He wants to give a good report. He wants to be able to say, you know what, Solid Rock Baptist Church did okay. And more than okay. Alright? Because ultimately, he's got to stand up and give an account for the collective body. Just like a field commander has to give an account for the actions of his unit. Alright? The captain of a ship has to give an account for the sailors aboard his vessel. You know, if the ship ever wrecks into something, right, ever goes aground, ever gets damaged in some way, you know, the guy who loses his job? The captain. Right? The commanding officer of that ship is out of there. There was a guy, by way of a quick story, he was a captain in the Navy, which is one step below an admiral. He had been selected to be an admiral. He was coming home to get promoted. He was on his final trip, this aircraft carrier he was the commanding officer of. And being a good sailor, his quartermaster looked at the clock and looked at the speed of the vessel and said, "We're going to be 3 minutes early. Let's slow it down a little bit so we can get there just exactly on time, because that's the way you're supposed to do things." So he slowed down a little bit. What he didn't take into account was they were passing through some waters that were sort of heavy traffic in terms of the boats that were docked in different places and moored down and so forth. And when you're in a vessel as big as an aircraft carrier, the current tends to move your vessel little by little in the direction of the current. And so they're going through the waters, heading towards the port, and as they are passing by a ship, which they'd already calculated they would go pass smoothly by, they've slowed their speed down, and now the current has a little bit longer to act on that vessel. And what ends up happening is they ram smack into that other ship that's just sitting there. Right? And they T-bone, as they say, right, this other ship. Guess who didn't make admiral? Guess who was relieved from the Navy that day? Right? The commanding officer, who happened to be downstairs looking in the mirror, straightening his tie, getting his suit ready for his promotion ceremony. Not up on the deck at all. Had no idea they'd slowed down. But it was his fault. You see that? And so it is in the Christian life. There's responsibility and there's accountability. All right? And that's the way they do business. It's not about you. That's the first thing you got to know about the Christian life. That's the first thing you need to know to be a sailor. Is you need to know it's not about you and that you're accountable for something bigger. There's other things. That might be the biggest one. But there's other things that fall under it. If you buy into the first one, the other ones won't be a big deal. I'll just list a few. To be a sailor in the U.S. Navy, you've got to have integrity. All right? You need to be trustworthy. If a job is given to you, the person who gives you that job needs to know, not guess, but know, you're going to do it. Why? Because lives are on the line. Right? 18-year-old kids, pardon the expression, right? But 18-year-old kids are running $100 million nuclear reactors. Right? They have a responsibility. They got a big job. And it's their work that's been. They need some integrity that they're not going to slack off and read a comic book when they're supposed to be looking at the gauges. Right? They need to be trustworthy, that they can be left alone to do the job and they're going to do it diligently. Right? They need to be honest about the mistakes they make. That's another one. That's part of integrity. If I tell you something, I call up and I say, hey, the pressure on the gauge is whatever, and then I turn around a minute later and say, oh, I read the wrong one. I'm going to look like such an idiot. It's not okay just to let it go. Somebody's making a decision based on the information that you're giving them. And if you give them wrong information, you need to correct it now. See, in the Christian life, if you do something wrong, let's say you say something wrong to somebody, it's not okay just to let it slide. You need to correct it now. Remember that spiritual battle that's going on. They're making decisions and they're contemplating things and things are going on inside of them based on the inputs they get. And you're part of the inputs. You say something that's maybe a little too harsh, maybe a little too critical, wasn't said in the right spirit. You need to correct it. And you need to do it now. It goes without saying for the Christian, but the sailors actually bring up the need to have good morals. Right? If you're going to be a sailor in the United States Navy, you can't be loosey-goosey with everything. You can't live life in the fast lane. You got to have some morality about you. Why? Because I can't have you getting drunk and then coming to work and not able to do your job. We're dependent on you. And it could be at a moment's notice. You could be off for the next 3 weeks on the schedule. But guess what? The guy who you're supposed to be doing the job you do broke his leg. And now we need you back. Now. It's not about you. And you got to be always ready. All right, another part of integrity, largely speaking, is the need for some humility. In the Christian life, again, that should go without saying. There's a need for humility because it's not about you and you're not everything, all right? It's about God. And God is the doer of the things that get done in our lives. All right? Without me, Christ says, you can do nothing. And we need to have that understanding about us. We need to know that we can't do anything without Christ. And the sailor needs to know that aside from his team and the other people on his ship, he can't do anything either. He's not going to win the war. He's not going to put out the fire. He's not going to do anything without those other people. And with that said, there's a need for some teamwork. If you're going to be a sailor in the United States Navy, you need to be a team player. One of the instructors that we interviewed told a story. He said that he was on a fire team. He's got 10 guys that are supposed to come down holding this big hose, walk down these stairs, and put out the fire that's currently burning in the ship he's on. And they'd all been practiced and trained together, and they'd all worked on this time and time again. But this time it was a real fire. And he was the lead guy on the team. He was in the front of the rope. He picked it up. The other guys picked up the rope. They started running toward the fire. They had to march down the stairs with the hose. They get down into the fire. He turns back to look. Only one other guy is there behind him. Everybody else ran when they saw the real thing. They put that fire out. But he said he never spoke to the other guys who were on that team for the rest of that trip. Why? Because they're worthless. Because they left him for dead. Right? That's what they did. They just said, let him burn up. We're going to the life raft. Right? Wouldn't it be horrible to be at the judgment seat of Christ and find out that's your testimony? You let somebody else run into the battle and you left because you got afraid. That's not something I want to think about. But how easy would it be? Fire is dangerous. Fire is scary. Right? You could die. And there's reasons you want to live. Let's face it. Sometimes when it's not about you and it's about the higher cause, it means that it's really not about you. And you are expendable. That's a tough pill to swallow. But in the Christian life and in the body of Christ, you need to see yourself as expendable to the needs of the team. Again, that's totally contrary to the way we want to be and the way we want to think. But it's necessary. And the thing that struck me as I heard these guys tell these stories over and over again, they're talking about the military. A wonderful institution and something that I have much respect for, I worked for. But in the eternal sense, the affairs of this country don't mean a whole lot. Right? The wars we win or don't win aren't going to make an eternal difference. But to be a good sailor, these things were vital. How much more should we see the need for these things in the Christian life, which is eternally valuable? Right? Do you see the thing I'm trying to bring out here? That they have this incredible, and some of these guys, they don't just talk about these things. They live these things. They are dedicated to these things. They will go down into the fire. They will jump on the grenade. Okay? They will do what's necessary for a cause that, when all is said and done, is less by far than the calling that each of us is called to here today. Let that sink into you for a little while and think about it and say, am I ready to jump on the grenade, spiritually speaking? Am I ready to go without that the team can go on? Am I ready, you see, am I ready to endure hunger and thirst and nakedness and peril and sword so that the message continues? Right? That's what we have to do. Another thing about being, which is directly in line with what I just said, another thing that it takes to be a sailor in the United States military is you have to be self-sacrificing. And to be self-sacrificing, it means that you got to stop thinking about me. And you got to start thinking about we. Right? And when I asked the people about being sailorized, being turned into a sailor, I asked them, what's the impediment? What keeps people from being sailorized? And the answer that I got over and over and over again was, in the United States of America, in our culture, it is about me, me, me. Everybody has a sense of entitlement. Especially now, they say. Of course, everybody probably says that about the younger generation than them. But these kids, they just think they can have it all and everything's about them and they're so entitled. And it wasn't like that for me, right? Probably was compared to whoever came before you. But the point is well taken that we can't have a sense of entitlement. Think about Job. Job was a righteous man. A great man. A man that God himself said, there's none like him on all the earth. But truth be told, Job had a little sense of entitlement. Right? He had a little sense of, it's not fair, after all I've done, after all I've been, that this is happening to me. And the point that God makes in the end is, look, Job, you don't know everything. I do. Leave it in my hands. It's all going to come out okay. All right? And that sense of entitlement that you have is a misplaced sense. I can do horrible things to your life and still make it for your good. Don't think that you get everything just to go fine. And Job knows that too. I mean, he doesn't fall prey to it in the way probably many of us would. He says, the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away, blessed be the name of the Lord, right? I mean, Job says it right. He gets it right. But when it wears on and time grows long and he's in that state, he starts feeling like God has done him some disservice for some reason he doesn't deserve. And it's not about what he deserved or not. There was a different purpose. There was a different thing going on he was unaware of. Okay? So we need to know that. We need to know that it's not about us. We accept whatever bad things come our way because it's for a better cause, again. To be a right, and we're going to finish up here in just a second, to be a right sailor in the United States Navy, you got to think. You got to be a thinker. You can't just be a drone. Right? You gotta know what you're supposed to do. You gotta be good at your job. Right? But sometimes it takes thinking on your feet. Sometimes things don't go by the manual. And you need to improvise. Alright? You need some common sense sometimes. Sometimes you gotta be able to multitask. Right? Sometimes you gotta be able to do all kind of things. But you know what? You need to be able to do is take constructive criticism to be a good thinker. Somebody might have an idea of how you could do things better. And instead of getting defensive and saying, who are you to tell me how to do my job? Take every bit of criticism you can take. Prove all things, hold fast to that which is good. Got it? I mean, they might not have the right to tell you that, as it were. They may be totally off base, but at least say, you know what, I'll think about it. You might be right. If they are, do something with it. If they're not, then, it's okay. If you're doing okay and God's okay with you and what they said is off base, that's fine. Certainly Job had a lot of that. All right? But we need to be able to do that. We need to be able to deal with constructive criticism. We need to have a work ethic. You need to be professional in the sense of being patient, taking pride in what you do. All right? Putting duty first. All those things are requirements to be a good sailor in the United States Navy. How much more for us? How much more for us? Finally, to be a proper sailor, to be a fully useful sailor in the United States Navy, you have to have confidence. And by confidence, I mean two things. I mean, you need to be courageous. All right, as God tells us many times, fear not. I am with thee, fear not. Right, neither be dismayed. All right, you need to be courageous and do what needs to be done that way, but you also have to be resilient. See, there's a confidence that comes from being knocked down and getting back up. Right, the quote in the flyer today, right, is a good quote because the guy's talking about he's going to get knocked down and he doesn't care because he knows he's going to get right back on his feet. A lot of people in the Christian life got knocked down one time, and they've yet to get back on their feet. If you want to be a right sailor in the United States Navy, you need to be able to get knocked down and get back up. As a Christian, you need to be able to get knocked down and get back up. You need to be able to go through a church split and get back up. You need to be able to go through that person who is berating you for something that they don't need to berate you for, and get back up. Alright, you need to be able to deal with false brethren and get back up. You need to be able to deal with difficult callings and difficult circumstances and God not seeming to answer your prayers and get back up. Yeah. And in doing so, and seeing how God treats you at the latter end, you gain confidence. See, Paul says in one place, we rejoice also in tribulation, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, right? And patience, experience, and experience, hope. And what's that hope do? It makes you not ashamed. It gives you confidence. To be a good sailor, you need to be confident. All right? And you walk with confidence. And you will hear people tell you, who are in such positions, they can tell a sailor, a real sailor, from a guy who's dressed up like one in a lineup. They can both wear the uniform. If one's a fake and one's the real thing, they can tell them apart just by looking at them. As a Christian, can you say the same thing? Can somebody look at you and say, that's the real deal? Or are you just wearing the uniform? All right, how do you wear it? Do you wear it how it's supposed to be worn? Do you have the full armor of God on, all straightened up, squared away, like it's supposed to be? Or are all the buckles loose? Right, and some of the pieces missing? All right, examine yourselves in those ways. Think about that. All right. Do you have a Christian life that is just a hobby? You don't even remember what you put in your breastplate of righteousness. It's in the closet somewhere. You get it out when you think you have time for it. All right? Is it a job? Yeah, you put it on, but it's heavy to you. Is it a profession? You take pride in how it looks. And not only do you put it on, but you make sure it's put on just so. All right? What's your Christian life like? There's another word that we might add to the list I'll just close with. There's hobbies, and there's jobs, and there's professions, but there's something that's more than that. There's callings. Somebody who feels called to service knows it's not about them. See, a professional can invest in becoming something and spend time and energy to become the best they can be in whatever that profession is. Someone who has a calling already knows what they're supposed to be. And it's just a matter of filling the shoes. Right? The great thing about a calling is there's a caller. Right? And once your name is called, and you know what you're supposed to do, you have confidence that you are selected for that mission for a reason. Right? Listen for the calling. Listen for the calling. Now, the very first calling, obviously, is the calling to get saved if you're not. Right? Beyond that, though, don't just sit down. There's another job to be had. All right. We're going to close with that. I'll hand it over to Brother David.
That was a blessing, amen. That's some real deep thoughts there for us to consider. And if you've ever been in the military, you know what he's talking about. If you haven't been, watch some John Wayne movies, amen, and you'll get an idea of it. But if you're a Christian, God's called you to be a soldier. I'll read one verse of Scripture here, or two, and then we'll have an invitation time. But 2 Timothy 2, verse 3 and 4, Paul says here, he says, "Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ," or good sailor, as he spoke about this morning. "No man that warreth," who's in the battle, "entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier." And if you're saved, God has chosen you and called you to be a soldier for him and to live a life that's pleasing to him and to serve him as a good soldier of Christ. And I hope that you'll take into consideration what you heard this morning, and God will use it to help you be a stronger Christian on the inside so that you can be a good Christian on the outside. Amen. Let's stand with our heads bowed and our eyes closed while Jennifer comes and plays a song of invitation. We're not going to sing, but this altar is open, and if you need to pray, I'd like to.